All right, with me today again, Jeffrey Weiss, poli-sci prof at Des Moines Area Community College. And also Mark Jacob, a former Metro editor with the Chicago Tribune and also the news editor for the Chicago Sun-Times Sunday edition. Mark, Jeffrey, welcome back to the conversation. So one person that I don't think the legacy media is paying enough attention to is Stephen Miller, who is basically... I think he referred to him pretty accurately recently, Mark, at a column you wrote, calling him the fevered brain that is pushing a Trump dictatorship. That's harsh. I don't find it inaccurate.
If it's accurate, I like it to be harsh. He has avoided becoming front and center to this whole, all this policy, especially the immigration policy, when he's the one who's really driving it. And that's a great advantage to him because he's really a very off-putting public figure. And so if he had to stand up there every day and, defend it, I think people would get sick of it. Instead, he's back at the White House, telling other people to do all these nefarious things. And he's anti-immigrant. I mean, it's not like he's anti-undocumented immigrant. He thinks that the country is not white enough. That's basically what he's saying. He does not want people coming in from other countries, unless they're he hates third world people from third world countries, and he has this view that they're hurting America, when there's actually there academic studies that show that immigrants actually contribute more in taxes than they take out in benefits. Yeah. So it's not factual what he's doing. It's really just kind of a hate platform.
I think if you look at Stephen Miller closely, you'll see very clearly where this administration is heading. I mean, again, he's very comfortable with white South Africaners moving to the U.S., as is Trump. But there is this, I think it's fair to call him a Christian nationalist and a white supremacist.
And that he's not Christian, but he's a nationalist. Yeah, he's a white nationalist.
Okay. But does he consider himself a Christian nationalist, which I think is an oxymoron?
No, I think he's raised Jewish.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But clearly he's a nationalist.
He's a white nationalist.
Well, he's into what you might call the great replacement theory. This idea that there's a nefarious plot by the Democrats to bring in people from overseas so that white people don't get control of their own country anymore. That kind of paranoid delusion that really is just kind of a mask for just basic racism.
Because dating back 500 years ago, this is always a white country, right?
Yeah. Well, right. And the thing that gets me is, and I get that into this in my newsletter, is that, Stephen Miller's, his ancestors came over this country, from Belarus, with nothing, and they made good in this country. So here he is, generations later, deciding that that other people can't have the American dream.
Right.
It's just so hateful and so manipulative of people's prejudices.
I'd say the same thing about Sean Hannity, Irish descent, an Irish American who is. He would not be allowed on any venue in Ireland. His rhetoric is so hateful and so contrary to any kind of open-minded perspective of the role of government in the world. It comes from a background. The Irish were the immigrants of 100 years ago that everyone despised. there were other groups as well, but it's amazing to me that people like Miller or Hannity can forget where they came from and become part of the problem.
Right. And most of us have a good experience with immigrants. Think about it. Great restaurants, great music. It just makes America more interesting, don't you think? It's not a bad thing.
Who else would fix our roofs?
That's going to be a real issue.
I know.
One thing I was going to ask you too, Mark, your newsletter, Stop the Presses, a lot of it has been the theme of the right-wing takeover and sort of the normalization of extreme right-wing ideology, which isn't conservative at all. And, I wonder what you think, Tucker Carlson and some of these people who have such a big platform, and they're also people who push white replacement theory. And so much of the extremism, I mean, you write about that. I mean, what is the advantage that the far right has in terms of the funding model that we have in the United States that the left doesn't have?
Well, I mean, more rich people want to stay rich. And so, I mean, more super rich want to stay super rich. So they like to, the Republican Party has really made a smart political effort to woo rich people, but with tax cuts. And so if you're going to save people millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, well, they're going to take maybe 1 million of that and they're going to give it back to the Republican Party or give it, you know, as seed money to people like Tucker Carlson. I mean, there is this real kind of perpetual motion machine going on where the super rich pay for the politicians, then the politicians pay the money back to the super rich. And it's your money, really. I mean, because you're as regular people, you're getting taxed more because the rich people are getting taxed less. I mean, it's not super complicated. But that's what's happening, and you get these really radical people, the Uline family, for example, and based in Illinois, and they are very active in Wisconsin, and they may be active in Iowa, I don't know, but I mean they fund a lot of stuff. They helped fund the rally before the January 6th attack on the Capitol. I mean they have their money in a lot of different places, and so these right-wing organizations, Moms for Liberty and stuff, they don't rise out of nowhere. And they're right. And to a large extent, a lot of these places are astroturfed. You know, it's not grassroots, it's astroturfed. They get a lot of money. There's a lot of money flying around in politics.
Explain that, Mark, astroturfed versus grassroots.
Well, that's an expression for, like, you know, all right, so grassroots was when regular people just said, well, I can't take it anymore, we're going to fight against this. But when a right-wing foundation, or a left-wing, I suppose, but any foundation or any political organization kind of sweeps in and recruits people in an area and gets them to be active in an issue, but kind of hides where they come from and pretends that it's grassroots, there's a slang expression calling that astroturf. I
hadn't heard that, but it makes sense. Yeah. So what could you say is the legacy media's shortcomings when it comes to exposing Stephen Miller?
Well, they don't write about him enough. They as being the real person behind it. New York Times had a good article about him just the other day and really said that since the shootings, the killings of people in Minneapolis, Homeland Security had tried to take a lower profile, including Stephen Miller. You know, part of the reason that stuff happened in Minneapolis was Stephen Miller. I mean, he was really angry that they weren't deporting 3,000 people a day, which is he had just simply decided that's how many they were going to deport. I mean, people need to understand that this really important policy that is hurting people and causing deaths is not, I mean, Stephen Miller is the main driver of this, and the news media need to pick up on that. And frankly, as I pointed out in my piece, the Democrats need to too. I mean, they'd be way better off making kind of Stephen Miller the kind of, ugly poster child for this whole policy. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he's just a smarmy guy. He's just terrible. I mean, in the piece I mentioned that when he was in high school at Santa Monica High School in California, he's remembered for a speech in which he said, "Am I the only one who is sick and tired of being told to pick up my trash when we have plenty of janitors who are paid to do it for us?" I mean, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just the kind of guy who was just the biggest jerk in your high school. And, always, privileged and entitled and, never believed in hard work. He just believed in connections. I mean, it's just a bad guy.
One thing you were talking about, Mark, in terms of the political economy of the media. I mean, it seems that, if we have a system where big corporations send big checks to other big corporations, to attract people with purchasing power that the Democratic Party itself is at a big disadvantage? Because, I mean, Democratic Socialists don't exactly do well with FCC regulation, nor do they attract advertisers. You know, I don't know. I want to ask you, but like a Bernie Sanders couldn't get a 2-hour, 3-hour talk show on national radio, not because he wouldn't get a lot of listeners, he would, but because who's going to advertise for somebody who says one of the biggest problems in the United States is the power of corporations, you know, brought to you by Disney. So, I mean, I don't know. I'll just throw that question out to you. It seems like, you know, that really there's just a huge advantage that you spoke of before, which is the ability to attract billionaires who are, you know, care more about money than they do about freedom or democracy.
Right. Right. I mean, well, that's basically it. And you know, you make a good point. It's that there is, you know, that rich people are people who decide who gets advertising dollars. And so that's where they go. It is a kind of a myth in this country that the reason there's so much right-wing radio and so little kind of liberal radio is that more people want to listen to right-wing radio. I mean, maybe more do, but not that many more. Right. The difference is a lot of these, you know, right-wingers, they're subsidized by, you know, by extremely rich Republican right-wing people. I mean, the Rush Limbaugh in his early days got big tons of money from right-wing foundations. I mean, it wasn't a meritocracy, is what I'm saying. I mean, it wasn't one of those things where, well, the reason there's a lot of right-wing radio on in this country is because there's, you know, great demand for it, and it's more that, you know, extremely rich people gave money to, you know, to fund these things.
It sounds like Michael Moore didn't. I mean, his TV Nation was actually quite popular, and as a political dissident, I believe he sort of ended up being exiled to Europe in terms of getting funding for TV Nation, if I recall.
I want to talk more about radio in the next segment. A couple quick questions, Mark, before we got to run to a break. You wrote that Stephen Miller is the 21st century American version of a Nazi, which makes him one of the most dangerous people alive. That's pretty blunt.
Yeah.
Why do you feel that way?
Well, because he says stuff like that. I mean, you know, he says, you know, if you import the third world, you become the third world. In other words, number one, the whole concept of third world is, you know, I mean, is like, in effect, you might as well say, you know, brown people or black people. This whole thing, like, you just look at what's happening in Minnesota. What is that? They have taken the Somali immigrants and they have turned them into a giant target.
Yeah.
In which they're like, Trump's calling them garbage. I mean, that's a direct quote, garbage.
Yeah,
he's calling human beings.
Yeah.
Low IQ, you know, and this is a lot of the stuff people think comes from Miller, because, you know, that's just, he has this kind of race-based thing going.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, this is how every really scary, bad thing that dictators have done. This is how, I'm sorry to bring up Nazi Germany, but this is how Nazi Germany happened, is that you took an ethnic group and you decided to pretend that they were subhuman, and you got other people to hate them, and then you systematically took away their rights and persecuted them.
Yeah.
Well, this is what Trump and Miller are doing right now in Minnesota.
So
it's not a coincidence that these people are black that they're targeting.
Yeah. Poisoning
Trump
the blood of
America. Always calls black people low IQ. Yeah. Always.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Mark. Trump is up there in years. His health appears to be very bad. You wonder how much longer he's going to last. But it seems to me the stage has been set for another person of his perspective, another authoritarian, to come in and fill the role. Steve Miller is comparatively young and right now seems to be the major architect behind the direction Trump is taking our country. If and when Trump moves on and yet another authoritarian takes his place, do you think Stephen Miller will still be instrumental in continuing to move that agenda forward?
I think he might. I mean, it depends. I mean, J.D. Vance, if J.D. Vance, like, takes over the movement, He might want Miller, because Miller will do all the horrible things that he wants him to do. I mean, the thing about it is, normal people don't behave this way. You know, they don't decide that a whole groups of people are bad and evil and garbage. They don't, you know, and so finding somebody who's as bad as Stephen Miller and as aggressive and energetic as Stephen Miller in pushing a kind of a race-based agenda, you know, you can't always find somebody who's that enthusiastic about being a horrible person. And Stephen Miller is.
That is a great quote, Mark. Finding somebody who's that enthusiastic about being a horrible person. It's a great quote, and it's also frightening. I think when it describes Stephen Miller, it's pretty accurate.